You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we have so many spiders. They're everywhere. So many spiders.
Hello, everybody.
It's Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Welcome. Welcome to the There's Too Many Spiders podcast. brought to you by Arachnophobia. The movie in theaters everywhere in 1987, I think it was.
Was it 80s? Early 90s?
I'll look it up, but I'm pretty sure. Maybe it was shit. Okay, yeah. Going to IMDb.
Yeah, Arachnophobia, that's what we're going to talk about.
You talk about intro shit, I'll look up Arachnophobia. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. I'm Travis. He's Brandon. He likes Arachnophobia. If you like Arachnophobia or any other...
It was 1990.
It's a 90s movie.
Right on the cusp.
Split the diff. Split the diff, as they say. Anyway, follow us on Twitter, at Apathusiast. I'm at Jogomino. He's at Barnyard Cruise. We're on Facebook. We're at email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Follow our Instagram, apathetic_enthusiasm. We post reels there now. It's a thing. And then you can go to our website, apatheticenthusiasm.com. We are streaming live, as we do almost every Monday night, over at twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm. Thanks to those hanging out in the chat. And then if you missed the live stream, but you still want to see what we look like, you can go to youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Like, subscribe, do all the things you do on YouTube. And maybe catch an occasional YouTube short. Very occasional. It's rare, but they're there.
Very occasional. It happens once a week. I posted three this week, Travis. I posted three of them.
All right, I'll have to check the...
They're all on Friday.
I'll have to check the YouTube studio a little bit later, see how they're performing.
I didn't spread them out, but they're all there.
Yeah, spamming the videos over on YouTube. Finally, a big thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Thanks for supporting the show, supporting us, and being all around cool people.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. 1990.
Arachnophobia. Just want to put this out there for anybody who is interested about what type of stuff we have on our Patreon. It's a whole lot of me just doing music shit at this point in time.
Yeah, if you really like Brandon playing music and you're not on the Patreon, you're missing out.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you really...
And then occasionally you get a post show that I think I forgot to post one last week.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, you did. Oh, you did.
Gonna get double posted, double post show posts.
Double post that post show. By the way, for our audio listeners, you don't know this, but we are both wearing In-N-Out shirts.
Completely unplanned. We just happened to both be wearing them.
Yeah, definitely not unplanned.
Yeah.
Sure. Well,
okay. I understand there's like a cult like following for In-N-Out Burger, especially if you grew up on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. You like In-N-Out. I like In-N-Out. Sure. That has been established. That is podcast canon. But you have In-N-Out Burger readily accessible to you. It is on your drive home, so to speak, I have to travel across state lines to get it. Now, you had In-N-Out Burger for dinner. Mm-hmm. You made sure to send me not one, but at least three photos of you enjoying your dinner.
Yeah.
And then you came into the podcast studio, so to speak, and you removed two layers of clothing. You removed a hoodie and then a polo shirt to reveal your In-N-Out Burger shirt underneath.
Yeah.
The question is, Brandon, did you put on that shirt today with the intention to go get In-N-Out? Did you put on the shirt and then think, hey, I'm wearing an In-N-Out shirt, I should get In-N-Out for dinner? Or did you just go to In-N-Out and happen to be wearing the shirt?
Well, Travis, it is more along the lines of option three, because I'm wearing a black In-N-Out shirt and I don't have a huge swath of black undershirts for my polos. And so I have here's what it is. Sometimes I want to take my polo off at work and then also have a shirt that I want to wear. So sometimes I wear a Steely Dan shirt. Sometimes I wear a Mystery Science Theater 2000 shirt, Army of Darkness or Friday the 13th. It's underneath my professional looking polo shirts. Just in the case I'm like, I'm going to go to a bar later. Woo! Time to party with some Evil Dead.
Steely Dan.
And so, yeah, I wore an In-N-Out shirt, undershirt, and I was in a rush. I was coming home. And I'm like, oh, I need to get dinner. And I was like, well, what's right off the freeway? You know what? In-N-Out. Let me get In-N-Out. I haven't had that in a while. Let's snag it. Sure enough, line was pretty low. I'm like, okay, got In-N-Out. Got home, immediately thought about how I was gonna rub it in your face that I had In-N-Out. And then
Sheena says you're rude, by the way, based on the photos.
Yeah. Said I was in a rush, made a joke about being in a rush, eating all my In-N-Out. And then when I got in here, took my jacket off. Then as I was taking my polo off, I thought, oh, yeah, I have an In-N-Out shirt on. Fancy that.
I think it's only fair that we share with our viewing audience the photos that you sent me. Okay. So this is his burger. These are the fries.
Eating a burger.
Oh, no. And then this is him with what we now know is pink lemonade. So
yeah. The audio viewer, you're missing out.
You're missing out. Make sure you go to twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm or check us out on YouTube. Make sure you can see this photo.
It'll be a reel.
Yeah. Anyway, we do have actual topics to talk about tonight. So many spiders. We are talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Is that the right one? Mm-hmm. Is that the one we're talking about?
Yeah. So without further ado,
you asked for it. Here it is.
It's our segue. time to talk about the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The latest in Spider-Man movie to grace us with their magnificent presence. This one is the sequel to
The Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse. A couple years back, it wowed everybody. The animation was amazing. Like it set off something, and we can talk about this more as we go into the movie itself. But it set off what some people think is like an animation renaissance about like being able to like take risks in animation, do different types of animation style and be more artistic in that way. You can see it in like the Ninja Turtle movies that coming up, even in some like television animation. We talked about Gremlins last week. Like even that is a more stylistic animation choice. So anyways, Into the Spider-Verse, now the sequel to that, part of a three-part, this part is the second one. There's going to be a third part, Across the Spider-Verse. So let's get into it. Travis, take it away. What do you want to talk about first?
I think just fair warning for anyone listening, we will eventually get into spoiler territory with this review because there are several things that we want to talk about within the story itself. But I think coming off of opening weekend, this was a movie that I was pretty excited to see as an animation fan, as a Marvel fan, as a Spider-Man fan. And I think I slept on the original Into the Spider-Verse movie initially, started to get some buzz in the box office, and eventually watched it. But I don't think I actually watched it until maybe it came out on video. I don't know that I saw it in theaters. But once I saw it, thought it was fantastic, really liked it. And it made me really excited to see this movie. My son was a huge fan. As a bit of a side note, it was one of like maybe two movies that he had saved onto an iPad when we went on a very long road trip. So I think he watched this movie like 8 times in a row, just over and over again.
Oh my gosh. Because
he had limited other options on a road trip. But he never got tired of it. So I don't know if that, you know, is an endorsement of the movie or what. But I heard a statistic where the original Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse grossed about $30 million on its opening weekend. And the estimates coming out of the opening weekend for Across the Spider-Verse, $120.5 million opening weekend. The fans have spoken. They are hyped for this movie, and some people even went out and saw it twice. From what I've heard,
yeah. Some people have definitely heard that. Well, I've done that. Some people have seen it. I think maybe more than that, which is also possibly impressive. They must not have family. So this one, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson, and written by Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and David Callahan. First of all, I want to talk about Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. They've been a big part of this animation, like different types of animation for the last couple years, right? Like I think they did Clone High way back in the day. And then they did the Lego movies, right? Like that was them. They've done some really cool stuff. Oh, I think they did like 21 Jump Street, which was like a great like reboot. Cool. With Channing Tatum and stuff like that. Like that's, I remember seeing 21 Jump Street as a, maybe an aside, but I remember seeing that and being like, that was a really good, funny movie that I wasn't expecting to like as much as I did.
Yeah. But
anyway, I feel like that is with them a lot, that something about what they put into the properties, they're like, it's enough love, but also taking it in a different direction. That's a kind of aside there.
Yeah. So if for some reason you missed the first offering in this franchise, this basically takes a look at Miles Morales. It is focused on the Miles Morales version of Spider-Man. And the first movie was sort of an introduction to how he became Spider-Man, but it quickly opens up a multiverse where he is visited by other versions of Spider-Man, right? So you have a Peter Parker, a Spider-Gwen, you had all kinds of like random Spider-Men. You had Peter Porker, the Spider Pig.
Noir Spider-Man.
Yeah. And one of the things I really liked about that film was they utilized the multiverse as a way to represent what is really unique in comic books about how you can have different versions of a character, different storylines, different takes on the same character, and they can all be Spider-Man, right? An artist has a different spin, a different idea. They can write a different story. They can draw the character differently. And so long as they follow certain aspects of sort of the rules of that character, it kind of makes sense. And so that movie really was a way of honoring that in comics, along with the art style, which really pushed the envelope on showing comics on film, on screen. And I feel like Across the Spider-Verse, this new film, takes all of those building blocks and just cranks them up. and you get even more types of Spider-Man. You get they really lean into the animation styles, and overall, I think it just for me made the movie that much bigger, that much more fun, and all along doesn't rely on like that as a crutch. It also has a really heartfelt story that I think is fun to watch, and I don't know, it's emotional too. So
the interesting thing about the movie is kind of coming off the heels of No Way Home, where in No Way Home we're focused on basically all Peter Parkers. We're focused on the three different Peter Parkers from the live action universe. Whereas in Across the Spider-Verse and Into the Spider-Verse, it's all different versions of Peter Parker, right? Like it's not Peter Parker. Yeah,
it's not even necessarily Peter Parker.
Right. Yeah. Right. Peter B. Parker, Gwen, Peter Porker, the anime one who like her dad is a spider or something like that, or the robot. Right. So none of them are Peter Parker. And then we go into Across the Spider-Verse, and then the Spider-Man that we're focused on again is now Miguel O'Hara, who's Spider-Man 2099. Jesse is the other Spider-Woman. I forget which
one. I think she was just Spider-Woman in the comics. Like,
yeah, I mean she has a name, but we'll come back to that in a second. But
then, like the actual character's name.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but then like Hobie, you have Hobie. You have Pavitr Prabhakar, from Mumbatan Spider-Man. Like you have all these other spider people that are not Peter Parker. And like that's what's interesting to me about the movies. One of the things is that they focus on all the different variations of who and what Spider-Man could be. They do share some similarities as far as tragedy goes. But I think the movie goes well into about how they're trying to tell us that this is all how it's supposed to be for a Spider-Man story, a Spider-Person story. It has to be this way. And that is what the central conflict that Miles eventually has to face, that he fights against is, this is what you're supposed to be. You're like, don't tell me what I'm supposed to be.
Jessica Drew.
Thank you.
Was the name.
I did say Jess, so I feel good about that.
It's good. You've seen the movie twice, so you
I heard it the second time.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience in the theaters the first time versus the second time?
I guess I
could go. Hold off.
I want to talk about that, but I don't want to talk about that yet. Let's keep talking about the movie itself, and then we could talk about movie theater experience.
Overall, you're talking about the plot of the film, right? And I think it is an extension of the first film in terms of Miles is his own Spider-Man, right? And like there's all these people that are trying to teach him how to be Spider-Man, and he kind of figures it out for himself and then pushes past those limits and comes up with some new powers and some new ways to be his own version of Spider-Man. I guess I wasn't expecting the new movie to carry that narrative as far, but really that does become the central kind of like crux of the film. Is even if you have this huge network of hundreds of different Spider-Mans, Miles is still this outlier. He's still this unique individual in a sea of Spider-Mans and Womans. And it's really interesting that we see them all kind of fall in line, and he's the one that's not willing to, as much as he wants to feel included and feel a part of this network and this bigger team. Very quickly he realizes, I'm not aligned with all of this, and I'm going to do my own thing, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And the fact that him and some other characters are willing to stand up for what they think is right and not necessarily just what everybody else is trying to achieve. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And to that point, when he, that conflict right there about him being the outlier and everyone else kind of walking the Spider-Man 2099 line. I don't know, I'm trying to avoid talking about spoilers necessarily, but if you're listening to this, you've probably either seen it or you don't care about spoilers. You wouldn't be listening to a podcast talking about
spoiler warning. Spoilers are approaching.
But so the whole thing is in the canon of Spider-Man, there is always an Uncle Ben and there's always some kind of captain or some major death that happens. Right. And so Miles finds out that his arch nemesis of the film is going to try to kill his father. And so he's like, I have to try. And all the Spider-Men across the Spider-Verse are like, well, I mean, this is how it has to happen. You have to let him die. And Miles' whole thing is like, I have to try. No, why won't you at least let me try? All of you would try. And so I read somewhere or heard someone say that, like, all those other spider people have already had their tragedies. They've already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so it's easy for them to be like, this is how it has to happen. Like, bad things happen, people die, and it's just, you know, this. Well, yeah, but you didn't have a chance. It's the free will versus predestination, like, or fate, right? Like, if I know what's going to happen, then I have to do my best to fight it, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, I thought that was kind of an interesting look at it. All those spider people have the deaths on their heads.
Yeah. Along with I don't know. I guess Spider-Man as a character, this movie does do a good job of really just like analyzing what makes a Spider-Man, right? And you talk about those canons, everybody has a tragedy or something that helps sort of form them into their version of Spider-Man. But also, like, almost every Spider-Man is kind of funny, right? They use humor, and it's funny when they get into the environment where all these Spider-Men are everywhere. How many subtle jokes are just thrown around? They really play up that aspect of Spider-Man, except for 2099. What's
Miguel
his name?
O'Hara.
Miguel O'Hara. Yeah. He's far more serious and stoic and matter of fact. But for the most part, all the other, even Spider-Punk, right? gets some jokes out there. I think that's really interesting, kind of just, again, what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man. And when you see
a difference,
somebody not doing that, like any kind of difference, it really stands out. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting choice for them to, and we knew it from the trailers that, like, the maybe the main villain of this episode, this movie, would be a Spider-Man 2099. And sure enough, like, he's a huge dick.
Do you consider him the villain of this film?
I do. Yeah, I do consider him the villain. Like, here's the thing about villains. A good villain is thinks that they're doing the right thing.
Okay. Right?
Like, yeah. they have their reasons, and whether or not they're evil or not, they think that they're doing the right thing. It's why Magneto ends up being a good character. It's why Dracula is a good character. Maybe not Dracula, but he does think he's in love, and he thinks he's, depending on which version of Dracula, it doesn't matter, whatever. Maybe Jason, he's not doing it because he's doing it. Well, maybe he is. He's killing, he's getting revenge. Whatever, Travis, you know what I'm talking about. I do think he's the villain of.
Do you think he's the main villain more so than Spot? Or do you think they're co-owning those roles for this film?
I think that Spot is he is maybe what they're building up to, but even
more of a villain of the week sort of.
Yeah, I think they want him. He's going to be a villain, obviously, but yeah, I don't think Miguel is the necessarily main villain of these two movies. Well, of total two movies. I think for this one, he is the primary antagonist because he's the one that is holding Miles back from his goal of protecting his family. He's the one who Miles comes in, wants to be a part of something bigger than himself, relate to people who understand what he's gone through, what he's going through. And Miguel is the one who actively tells him, you don't belong here. I don't want you here. And so from that perspective, wanting to belong, from the perspective of protecting his family, Miguel is the one who's keeping him from that. Yes, Spot is going to kill, is actively trying to destroy his life.
Spot is like the mechanism to make Miguel's, you know, intentions realized, so to speak, right? Like Miguel wants that cannon to happen, wants Miles to have that loss in his life with the loss of his father. Spot is the one that's going to go do that. It's probably more villainous to be working behind the scenes to make sure that happens than to be the one that unwittingly does it because you're, you know, a cow character.
You can't ask me to do that. I'm not asking you. And then he traps Miles, right? Like,
yeah,
actively keeping him from doing that, which is villainous in my eyes. Again, he thinks he's doing the right thing, but my problem, I guess, is like for Gwen, for Peter B. Parker, for some of the other Spider-Men in there, that they would be so willing to go with the plan of this guy who has no humor, and is like, why do I trust you just because you have technology allowing me to do these things?
Yeah, they believe the, I don't know, they believe what he's selling, right?
Yeah.
That this has to happen that way or it's going to break all of the multiverse. If the Spider-Men don't... is it like attorneys general? Is it Spider-Men? Spider-Man? How do you pluralize Spider-Man?
Spider-Men.
Spider-Men?
Spider-People. Just do Spider-People.
Spiders. Spider-Individuals. Well,
spider creatures, right? Because... like we could talk about
Spideys.
That.
We'll just call them Spideys.
Spideys. Because there's a Spider-Man T-Rex. There's a Spider-Cat.
Spider-Man-I.
What a Peter Park car, right? So
there are just so many one-off throwaway versions of Spider-Man that were hilarious. It does make me want to rewatch a couple times to appreciate all of them because I know I would not be able to think of half of them. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So going back to the villain angle, Spot, do you, maybe, you know, maybe jumping ahead, but what do you think? What do you think of that character, his motivation? Where he ends, because he kind of disappears like midway into the movie.
He does, because the space that he's filling as the villain starts to become a little bit overshadowed by Miguel's role within the film, right? And so he becomes a mechanism for the tragedy that is going to occur. But in terms of just like as a villain, I think he has a really good progression as a villain where he starts off as a very inept, not focused, not well thought out villain, very much a sort of villain of the week, if you will. If this was a weekly comic series or cartoon series, this could be one of those throwaway villains that has a power where he can use these transporting spots, and he could be dispatched very quickly, potentially by a Spider-Man, by a Spidey, and then move on, right? But instead, what we find is this is not just some throwaway villain, which based on the trailers, I kind of expected that. Just the way he was even shown in the trailers, I was like, yeah, this guy's going to be somebody that he fights once and then we move on.
Yeah.
But he has like a really developed backstory. The fact that they were able to sort of retcon scenes from the first movie to have him be the guy that gets hit by a bagel as they're escaping the research facility. That he was there as like the Hadron Collider is going, and the fact that like he blames Spider-Man for what happened to him and his mutation and the fact that he's lost his family and all these things. All of those connective tissues make for a really good villain, I think. And I, as that develops, you learn that over the first quarter of the movie, and then he learns more about his powers, learns more about what he's capable of, and then takes the steps to increase his powers. And all of a sudden he goes from a kind of a throwaway villain to like, oh, this guy is actually really strong, really powerful. He's now driven and focused on what he wants to do and has suddenly become a much more ominous villain that is going to be a lot harder for him or for any number of Spideys to potentially take out.
Yeah, agreed. What I like is, like a lot of Spider-Man villains throughout the movie series, like he starts off as bumbling. Like I think of Jamie Foxx in the Amazing Spider-Man 2. Maybe not Green Goblin, but you know, like just not having a whole lot of respect. And like he says, Spot says something. He's like, you use your quips, but no one ever thinks about like how we feel about being on the other side of it, right? And so I think maybe he jumps too quickly to blame Miles for the problem. He doesn't blame Kingpin enough, I think, for any of that. But I do think that he becomes a badass towards the end there, and that animation. Of him being like ultimate Spot is like so like what is it Race to Witch Mountain or that Demon Mountain from Fantasia.
Oh yeah
like where it's just, like
I don't know what it's called.
It's just like
yeah,
everything that's going on around him is so fucking cool looking. I think that's just a comment on the art in general. If you want to,
let's talk about that, because one of the things while I was watching this movie, and it's probably about halfway through, I just kind of caught myself in awe of the risks that they were taking, design wise, animation wise, the directions they were willing to stretch to create certain effects, to incorporate 3D animation with, you know, flat animation, with pencil drawing, with different art styles, different uses of color. Like there are studios, there are production houses that you say you want to make an animated Spider-Man movie and you're going to get a very flat, like, you know, very all colors have to be true to life, right? And they threw all of that out, and they were willing to take risks and use animation and use art styles to push the story forward, to heighten emotion and action. And to me, like this has to win like best animated feature at the Oscars next year, or
I'll never watch him again.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
It just, like, animation wise, this movie is amazing to me. Story aside, like, I love all the things that they do. The way you sent me that those tweets this morning, I woke up to tweets from Brandon. It's the best way to wake up in the morning. I highly recommend it. But it was somebody from the production team talking about is it Hobie?
Yeah.
Spider-Punk. And the mechanisms they use to animate him differently than the other characters on the screen. And it was really interesting because the effect comes off really well to give him a much more alternative look throughout the film.
Yeah.
What was it? They animated like every third frame instead of every two frames or something for him.
Yeah. So the film is 24 frames per second, FPS. So your eye... All movies are is just a bunch of pictures like a flip book, just done really fast. So 24 frames a second. So they did most of the characters. They did most of the like changes of poses on the twos. So every second frame, they changed the pose or whatever. Well, they for Hobie for Spider-Punk, they did every third frame. And then they also like did something different, like with his like his overcoat, where like sometimes they would like lag that slightly to be on this every second frame and then go into the third frame. And so it always just seemed a little choppier than the rest of everybody.
Yeah.
And so like super cool. And it's a little trick, but they were able to do that. But when they're doing that alongside all these other animation styles, in the background work, in some live action characters such as Prowler, with a dude from Community, what's his name?
I do. Why can't I think of it?
Donald Glover.
Like literally the inspiration for Miles Morales. Like, have you heard that whole backstory about like how Miles Morales is literally based off Donald Glover? Like.
No, I haven't heard that. I thought the Prowler character was based off of him.
So like there's this whole, and there are people online that have done this breakdown way better than I will, but basically when they were casting the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man, there was a push for Donald Glover to play him, and in Community, they actually like make a nod at that. I think it's in the second season premiere where Donald Glover like wakes up and he's wearing like a Spider-Man pajama top. And it was like a comment on it. Right. But that image, right, is it kind of, when they were working on this new run of Spider-Man, it inspired the character of Miles Morales. So Miles Morales is sort of based on Donald Glover, and then eventually when you get to the Spider-Man with Tom Holland, Donald Glover then gets to play the uncle who is the Prowler, right? And he references like his nephew, referencing, you know, without saying Miles Morales, talking about him. So there's, I think Donald Glover actually voices Miles Morales in an animated series. So like there's like all these connections, and they just like play into it one more level by having him cameo in this movie, and I think it's awesome.
Okay, so we talked about the twos and threes of Hobie, of Spider-Punk. Let's just do a little bit of a breakdown. Travis, who's your favorite non-Miles character?
Hobie, 100% Spider-Punk. Spider. 100%.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows it's Hobie. There's not even a point in breaking anything down.
It's a metaphor for capitalism.
It's a metaphor for capitalism. So it's so good.
You know what's funny is Hobie is my daughter's least favorite. She thought he was annoying. She didn't like him. And I didn't realize that's who she was talking about. She saw the movie before I did. And afterwards, I was like, Spider-Punk is awesome. He's the best. And she's like, what? I couldn't stand him. He was just so annoying. And he was against everything. And I'm like, yeah, he was a punk. He fully embraced and personified the entire punk movement with everything he did, the visual representation, everything he talked about, his role in the story was anarchy and fighting against the system and, breaking it down. I'm like, it was perfect. I'm sorry you didn't appreciate it. I thought it was great. I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, it's so good. And the Miles's interactions with him first, when he thought he was a love interest for Gwen, talking about labels and that kind of back and forth about it's really confusing, man. I don't like bands, but your name is Spider-Punk? I don't get it. Anyways, he's so cool. And that whole the whole metaphor for capitalism, I missed it the first time I saw the movie. And I heard people talk about that line, so I was listening for it the second time I watched it. And then I found it was like, that's couldn't be placed any better.
It's funny. I actually asked my kids while we were driving around on Saturday who their favorite, new Spider-Man was. And Spider-Punk is one of your options. Your other options, Spider-Woman, right? Jessica Drew. Mm-hmm. What's it? I like the Indian Spider-Man. I don't like, did he have like a,
Pavatier, I think is his name.
Yeah. And then I don't think there were were there a whole lot of other ones? Obviously there were hundreds in that one dimension, but there weren't a ton. There was the Avatar, cyber.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spider Bite was. It wasn't like into the Spider-Verse. And I think so Chelsea, this was her comment about the movie, why she doesn't feel like she liked it as much as the first one. Whereas the first one you had all these different spider people, but it focused on them. Mm-hmm. And so you were able to focus on them. It was like, that's cool. Here's a bunch of different versions. Whereas this one was it was just a handful, but they only really focused on Gwen and Miles and Miguel, basically. Jess, they didn't focus as much on her. So I think that was Chelsea's kind of issue with it. And I think to a certain extent that's true, right? We're talking about what's our five favorite Spider-Man of this movie, and we're like, well, Hobie, right? Hobie or the villains, the spider villains. We could talk about Ben Reilly really briefly.
He was so brooding. And so there was one that in the chase where they're chasing Miles out of the facility, there's one that looks just like what's the guy's name that created Deadpool?
Rob Liefeld.
Had a real Liefeld style to him, and he's like got him in a headlock, and he's like, "I got you stuck in my muscular definition or whatever," right? And that version of him, that looks just like Liefeld, the fact that
my pose, and then he perfect pose, and then he moves his leg to the side.
I think the fact that they're willing to play with the art styles, combine art styles in an individual scene, have characters look completely different, have live action characters incorporated in, you know, you see all these scenes of different universes, and then you have a scene of like Uncle Ben from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, like when he's dying, and you're like, oh, like there's my childhood, right? Like there's the you know, so it's just it's really interesting that they're willing to do those things. Oh yeah, spoilers, lots of spider spoilers if you're just joining us on the stream.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're joining us on the stream, Omar is in here and he doesn't want to hear spoilers. He doesn't care about spoilers normally, but so hang out, Omar.
Wait till we talk about the end of the movie.
Greg talking about Aunt May from Tom's too. I looked, I didn't see it specifically, but I was like, I'm sure that was in there somewhere, during one of the live action pieces. So
maybe,
yeah.
There are so many Easter eggs and things hidden throughout the movie. You could probably watch it five or six times and still miss things.
Like,
so,
like 2099 calling out the Spider-Man of 1999, in that whole Doctor Strange stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, calling him out, and then Gwen being like, Doctor Strange, it shouldn't be operating on anyone like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, good stuff. All right, where do you fall on, because I've heard a little bit of this back and forth, did you like the second film better than the first one?
It's hard to say. Like, the first film changed a lot of things. Like, I watched in the theaters, I was like, this kicks ass. Like, this was not a movie I cared about necessarily, and here it is now, and I love it. And just the animation wowed me, and the story wowed me, and it turned me into a person who was ambivalent about Miles Morales, and turned me into like I like this character and I want to know more about him. Right. Plus Peter Porker was in it. Now, Spider-Man. Now going into
John Mulaney's had some problems. He did not come back to do a voice in this one, but
he did have a voice in it. Maybe the cameo voice towards the end.
Did he? I didn't hear it. So
yeah, but yeah. So this one like expands on it. There's a lot more emotional things to get through. The second time I watched it, the first half was a little bit slower, I guess. Especially like parts with his parents, right?
I would say the pacing, there were moments throughout the movie where I was like, all right, let's pick it up. Like, I get what we're talking about, and I know that we're building in some story and things, but like, let's keep moving. Like, I caught myself a couple times being like, all right, like, yeah, a little boring.
I almost fell asleep during those parts on my second viewing. I saw that at noon on a Sunday, and I'm like, all right, woo. And those parts dragged a little bit, not because they're bad parts, but just because the movie starts off with a whole lot of action. And then when it goes into the Miles stuff, then it slows down really to build up the emotional stakes of his journey through the rest of the film. And once they go into the Spider-Verse, then it picks up, and then I was back into it 100%. So to answer your question, I don't know if I like this one better, but I will say animation wise and scope and ambition, I think it is a way more ambitious film, and way, you know, you said it earlier, like they took the things from Into the Spider-Verse and they took it up another level.
Yeah.
As far as art. And I want to, you know, I think I want to talk about some of that in a second here. But what about you? How do you feel about it?
I think I liked this one more. I don't know. The first one's, I have a bias because it was like the first exposure to this, right? And it did multiverse so well, and the introductory of Miles as a character, It's just such a great film on its own. If that was a standalone film forever and you never had these sequels, I'd still think it was great. I think because this built on it, and I just am so in love with certain images and sequences from this new film that I think I'd have to say I like this one more just because of where it's building, with the one exception. And maybe this makes it a number two for me instead of my number one.
Oh,
how it ends, right?
Oh. Okay.
This is film two of three, but they didn't have to, you know, go full Empire on us and like build up all of these stakes and put all these things and then like just kind of like end the movie right as all of these things are kind of coming to a climax. And for me, like sitting next to my son in the theater, as it ends, he looks over me, he's like, "Dad, I'm not satisfied." I'm like, what do you mean? Like, did you like it? He's like, "I mean, it was great, but I'm not satisfied. I don't want it to end that way." And I'm like, yeah, that's intentional because they want you to come back and see the last film. But I'm going to come see the third film regardless. You can put some closure on something, on some plot line, and I'm going to come back for it. But it to me, ending a film the way that this one did, just doesn't, it's not as satisfying. And so to me, that's a little bit of a ding against it.
Yeah, I can see that, because even with Empire Strikes Back, like there's a little bit of, it ends on a softer note, right? It's like, okay, Han Solo's gone. We gotta go get him. We gotta go get him back. I just lost my hand. A robot built me a robot hand. You know,
yeah,
like there's something to look forward to, but it's not like he chopped off my hand, what am I gonna do, to be continued, right? That, and I think that's the equivalent of it. At the end of this film, Gwen, she gets the band together and they're all gonna go get and help Miles, who finds himself in the wrong dimension, trapped by the Prowler, in the claws of the Prowler, and him gonna fight through his own thing. And then
I
also
loved how they did that whole thing, by the way. Like the last, I do love the last like 20 minutes of this movie. Like it's just, I just wish it wasn't the last 20 minutes. that's my problem.
Yeah. And yeah, I get that being a problem. Like, you knew it was going to be a two of three. I knew it was going to be a two of three. So me going into the two of three was like, I know this isn't going to end. It's not going to wrap up the entire story. I know that. So I guess my last 20 minutes, the first time, was like a bunch of false peaks. That's what it is. It's like going up the Manitou Incline in Colorado Springs. You're walking up the hill. You're like,
everybody understands.
Everyone gets. You're walking up the steep ass mountain, and you can see the peak. And as soon as you get to that peak, you realize, oh no, it's just the angle I was at. I couldn't see the real top of the mountain. Oh, it's gonna keep going. That's what happened at the last 20 minutes of the movie. Is, oh, shit's gonna happen. Yeah. Oh, something else is gonna. Oh no! So there's a little bit of excitement fatigue, where you're like, one of these parts would have been good to end it. Like when Gwen leaves her father, that might have been a good place to end it. Even with Miles being faced with the Prowler, like that reveal, that would have been like a good like, dumb. What happens next? Not a, yeah, with this badass, woo, to be continued. And it's like, no, you're like,
don't continue
me on a, there's no resolution or, it's like music. Like they're just like, da 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 da. Wait, where's the, ba-dum, right? There should be.
It's coming to theaters in March of 2024.
But yeah, so I'm with you on that. One thing I really love. So again, I've said it a couple times. I'll say it again. I saw the movie twice. The first time, what I liked about the intro was it starts off, Gwen is playing the drums and she's talking about like spider people, and I'm not the only one. And there's like a bunch of scenes that she's playing the drums, and it's a very like angsty, like, and what I didn't realize then, and this is a spoiler for you, Omar, is it's actually showing a bunch of scenes from throughout the movie. She's actually talking about what happens in throughout the course of the movie as she's playing the drums in the beginning. But at the beginning, you don't know that, and she's going through some kind of emotional turmoil as she's playing the drums. Now, at the very end of the movie, as it's reaching this crescendo of emotion, she's got her own band now of a core group of spider people to help save Miles. It's that same drum, angsty kind of drum beat going on, the same music, same or similar music, but it's in a completely different context, whereas the intro is like strife, the end is determination to help save her friend. And it's like, it's such a fucking cool thing to realize when you piece those things together, that like this movie is told from Gwen's perspective, essentially. Like she is our narrator. It's almost like a lot of it is Miles, but in a way it's like, it starts with her, it ends with her. It's kind of about her growing up and realizing what it is to be a spider person.
A spidey.
We have talked about Spider-Manning for nearly an hour now. So if you're still with us or you're joining us online, and we've given you the spoiler warnings numerous times, I'm going to talk about the last like 10 minutes of this movie, which has a huge spoiler and a huge twist. But I absolutely loved it, because upon first viewing, when Miles gets sent back to his home dimension, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I had no reason to think otherwise. And the way the action, the excitement level of him trying to escape from the 2099 environment, and Miguel's trying to rip through the virtual, you know, cube or whatever, the geometric thing that's going to send him back. You're like, that's what you're focused on. Like, is he going to make it, you know? And then boom, he's out. He's thrown back into this world that he knows. He goes home. He has this heartfelt conversation with his mom. And like, I bought it. I was eating it up with a spoon. And then when she's like, what are you talking about? Like, what, oh, Spider-Man? Is that like is that where you wear to your comics con or whatever? Like, and all of a sudden it like dawns on me, the spider, it's not his DNA. He gets sent back to the spider, which is the first anomaly that is sent from another dimension. He's sent back to the spider's dimension, where that spider was not there to bite anyone and create a Spider-Man. And so then they start to peel back those layers of, oh, in this world, there never was a Spider-Man. And so then when Prowler shows up, or who you think is Prowler, his uncle's back, his uncle's alive. The reveal of Prowler in that dimension, I was just like, let's go. This is legit. This is going to be awesome. I'm so ready for this, however this interaction is going to go, to be continued. Like, I was so hyped for it.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends. I don't know. What did you think about the way that was written, the way that it was shown to us, the viewers, and just the overall concept of it?
Yeah, let's do that real quick, which is the first time I watched it, I didn't know that he was going to the wrong dimension. What I did notice, like on a subconscious level, I was like, there's something not right here. There's something off that I'm not really catching. I don't know what it is yet, right? And then eventually you get the reveal of, oh, he's in the wrong universe. And then, oh, Miles, that universe's Miles is the Prowler. I mean, once I realized that he was in the wrong universe, the uncle, they go up to the rooftop, Prowler hits Miles, and the uncle is not in the Prowler costume. That was my, okay, well, it's Miles. Okay, cool. Moving forward. And then, like, so that reveal wasn't surprising to me. It was just like, how are they going to reveal that that's Miles? Clearly, it's the same make and build of how big he is. So I was cool with that. And I'm like, all right, this will be an interesting thing to explore, the duality of Miles in a world where he didn't have a good mentor, and what a good mentor can do or not do for a person. Okay, now the second time I go see it, I pay extra attention to the differences between them. And that's when the subconscious things that I felt before, I realized the room was different. The room was different because Gwen is like outside his room in his real universe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, they film it to where it's like she's listening into Miles talking to his mom. But the inside of the room is different than what she's looking in. There's a different poster on the wall. I think in his universe, it says sashimi. In his not universe, it says like Oami or something like that. And the poster colors are different. Gwen, the universe she's in, it's raining. And then whenever it cuts back to Miles where he is, it's not raining outside. And the lighting is different. There's a lot of these very, very subtle differences that they don't hide from you. They're there.
Greg mentioning there's no toys in the bedroom that he's in.
Good call, Greg. Yeah. There's no toys there. All of these like very minor differences that, again, the filmmakers are not hiding from you at all. But once you realize that there is a difference, it's just beautiful that they're like, here you go. We gave you the clues. So that was really, really cool to me.
Yeah. Overall, I think we both love this film. I think we're both super excited for the next one to come out only a mere like 9 months from now. We could rate this film. I don't think we need to. It's, you know, probably close to 8, 9, somewhere in the 9 range. For us, but yeah, if you haven't seen this movie, you've listened to this whole episode and you haven't seen this movie, for starters, good for you. But also go check out this film because it really is incredible. If you love animation, even if you're not a Spider-Man fan, but you just really appreciate animation, I think it's definitely worth checking out just to see all of the different art styles and things that they pull off in this film. And yeah, and if there's anything that we missed, if there's anything that we didn't talk about with this movie, in the hour that we've been discussing it, hit us up. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you thought about it. You can send us an email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter or leave a comment in this YouTube video. We'd love to hear what you guys think about the movie and all of your thoughts. So, Brandon, before we head over to the Twitch/Patreon only post show, any other thoughts?
I have two major thoughts, Travis. The first
3 hours later.
The first of those thoughts is the everything within Spider-Gwen's universe, the way they did the art whenever she's interacting, it's got these heavy pink, blue tones. It's like watercolor. Feels very, very watercolorish, which is akin to like some of the covers in the actual comics for her. And they do. I love her segments because her emotional cues, her interactions with her father, like some of it is kind of a static watercolor. But then like when emotion starts happening, the watercolor starts to run. It's like they're adding water to it and it's just kind of dripping in the background. And it's a way more artistic, avant-garde type of animation, which is it's so fucking beautiful to me.
The entire sequence where she goes back home and her dad's there and she has that interaction with her dad. Like, I was emotional. I thought that was just beautiful. Like, I love everything about that sequence. Don't sleep on this movie. If you have not seen it, it's really good.
It hits. So then the second thing is, and the last thing I'll say is I saw it twice, everybody. The reason I saw it twice was, one, I wanted to see it, sure. But the main reason actually was we saw it on Friday, and I saw it in standard. I didn't see it like in fancy IMAX and Dolby Surround, any of that stuff. What you might find, what you might go on Twitter or Reddit, you might hear that the sound is not, some people are having a hard time understanding the dialogue, hearing the dialogue, and it has something to do with the mixing, and some Reddit posts explain it better than I do. But we saw it on Friday and I could barely hear a lot of the dialogue that was happening. Even non action scenes, I was having a hard time understanding the dialogue. And some of the monologues where Spider Gwen is talking, it sounded like the center of the mix was gone. So it's kind of sounded like in stereo, like it was coming from either side of the left and right, the far left and right, but it wasn't coming from the middle. It kind of sounded weird. So I'm like, I do want to see it again. Let me go ahead and see it again, this time in IMAX. Let's upgrade my experience, you know, check out some more details for the podcast and see if I can hear anything better. And the mix was still not great. It still had that kind of stereo kind of thing. But I know Lord has been like handing out like on Twitter saying like, tell your studio or your movie theater operators, bump it up to 7.5 their volume so they can hear it. But you might have the same issue, especially with the Cockney accent of Spider-Punk. That made it really difficult to understand.
I felt like the theater that I saw it in, overall, it was generally just quieter. But that's the second movie I've seen in this theater in the last month that I felt like it was, like the volume was too quiet. Mind you, the other two films I've seen in the last month, I did see both of those in IMAX, one of them in like a Dolby IMAX theater that was like super loud. But maybe I'm just getting old and losing my hearing, and I need to just go see things in Dolby IMAX exclusively. So,
yeah. Or just they need to compress their mixes a little bit differently. Who knows?
Who knows?
That's the biggest issue I had with the movie. But if you have seen the movie, if you're going to see the movie, make sure you hit us up and let us know what you thought. But I think that's it for me, Travis. I'll let you get the final word.
This whole podcast, it's just been a metaphor about capitalism. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Until next time, I'm Travis.
And I'm Brandon. Goodbye.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.